Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of that galaxy and direct from our own galaxy, this is Four Center Presents Other Center. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And we are here to take cues of the other. You've got some questions, we've got some answers and some fun ones as always today, and some that maybe make us think a little bit. Before we get to all that, we want to remind you, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. It's a good way to support the show and support your mind. Joseph, we have a recommendation that you put out there on the previous episode that I think is great for this season. What is it?
Yeah, I want people to join me in experiencing Dracula by Bram Stoker. I am rereading the novel. You could listen to it and you could hear the new chicken recipes that Jonathan Harker is discovering and hear about Dracula crawling around on walls like a lizard. If that piques your interest, you should definitely check out this audiobook.
Check it out. You can do so, like I said, support the show in the process by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. We also have an ask segment that we always just politely, humbly sit before you and say, hey, here's something to consider. I'll start it off and then pitch it to you, Joseph. We're asking you to check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/ForceCenter. And we have a new goal. We're close to hitting. It's a field trip goal. But Joseph, what is it and what do we got going on?
It is a field trip, but it is a special event episode, which has been really good. The way that it can help us. It's one thing to just go like, hey, can you check out the Patreon? The reason that we have the goals is to kind of try to build to something new and exciting and fun. So we're not just saying go to Patreon. And that's been working really well to do the kind of smaller increments. And in the special episode that we would love to do next is the three of us taking this field trip to the outdoor shopping mall, The Grove, where we can sample one another's favorite desserts. And then we're going to record some little videos while we're doing it, while we're eating cheesecake, donuts, and pie. And then we're going to do a whole podcast episode about the dessert experience. And if you're interested at all in helping us get there, you can go to patreon.com/ForceCenter.
Do it. Check it out. Help us out. It's all about helping everyone but us today. Helping the people. So there you go. There you go. All right. Made it better. Joseph, we got some great questions from our listeners here. So let's dive on into the cues of the other.
Yeah. These come to us from patrons on Patreon. The first one comes to us from Anthony King. Anthony says, hey, ForceCenter. My wife and I are currently in the process of moving to a different state where we do not have friends or family close by. How do you recommend ways that we can foster a community of support within our new home and area? I think this is a fascinating question. I have some ideas. I don't know if they're all good. And I also think a lot of it depends on the area as well, because I've definitely had an interesting experience with Minneapolis. Socializing in Minneapolis is just different than socializing in Los Angeles. And it makes me very curious to you know experiences from other cities and how their geography and their culture affect these kind of building new community. So where do you go with this one, Ken?
I don't have the direct experience like you have, but I do have because I think the big thing here with Anthony is he and his wife, he and his partner move in, Anthony is a great, insightful cat. I've had a chance to meet he and his wife and talk about some of the things we love. And he has a great podcast out there too. So that's kind of where you can start, Anthony. But for me, any big move I've done in my life has been by myself. And so there's a different approach to forming a community. It is with things that I have interest in, the things that I have to do, like work. And the one thing I think I have learned is it does take a little bit of time. But then also that new community and that circle of support is present and powerful, even though you sometimes overlook it. Meaning, here's where I go, where I have known some people now, 20 plus years of living in LA. There's some people I met my first year or two in LA at my security job. And I still call them friends and I still consider them close friends. But I still have this thing in the back of my head as they're the new friends I made in LA. And I've known them longer than the people from my past life in my hometown and high school, all that kind of stuff. And it took me a few years to realize the thing that I thought I was still missing. Cause I would go back to my hometown, was blessed to only be, you know, about 2.5 hours, 3 hours from it. And I'd sit up there and I get a little depressed of like, I don't have this in LA. I don't have the feeling, even though I have my regular haunt, my grocery store I go to, or the restaurant I like, which was really just a Chili's, all that stuff. I don't have the familiarity I have in my hometown, and maybe I shouldn't have left. Maybe I need that support here. I did have it, and I did make lifelong connections. I just didn't see it right away. So you have a chance to kind of rebuild some things. I used to did talk about this in my old podcast feed of even just switching neighborhoods in LA it's different. Like LA is so spread apart. If you move from Studio City to Burbank, that's maybe a 10-minute car ride at times, but it's an entire different world. And so you got to find your new favorite dry cleaner. You got to find your new favorite gas station, new favorite 7-Eleven. And those routines will breed some of the community support you're looking for. That's where I start. I don't know where you go. You have the big experience, Joseph, of doing that.
Yeah, and I think my experience is multifaceted because it has to do about city. But it also has to do, I think, with age up to a point. But I think the thing that I've really come to think about this is I think I feel lucky to have lots of friends in Los Angeles. And when Anthony says foster a community of support within our new home and area, I sometimes kind of go down my list of like, if I'm in trouble, do I have people to call? You know, and I'm like, yeah, I do, but it's there are communities. I feel like I have a collection of separated friends and not always community. And then I look back on my time in Minneapolis. I had community for a couple of reasons. One was just age in life circumstance that a bunch of us became friends when we were all in our mid to 20s, early mid end of this friend group. And a lot of us took similar life paths. So when we all wanted to hang out and play board games all night, we were all doing that. We all got married around the same time. A lot of us didn't have kids. So we were kind of in the same space, but then those communities really were solidified by activities, by doing theater, by having a specific parties that we did. My friends host an annual bar crawl, which was like kind of our friend groups, you got 4th of July, you got Halloween, you got bar crawl day. It was like a holiday. So we had all these things, these activities that bound the different groups together. And over the years, even I look on like social media, Facebook in particular, I started out with lots of pockets of friends in different activities and doing theater and performing at a science fiction convention were different worlds. And like, they've slowly morphed together where almost all of my friends know each other and are friends. And it's like, sometimes like, and since I've left, even like, oh, these two people that I've known for 20 years have become best friends in the last 10 years, but barely knew each other before. And I think Minneapolis in St. Paul, the Twin Cities are spaces that foster that kind of community with the way a lot of the scenes are set up. Los Angeles, as everybody jokes, is physically scattered of like you'll meet a friend and like, we should hang out all the time, but you do live several miles away. And we could be best friends if we got together at 2 a.m. on Tuesdays only. Because then maybe we could make it through the traffic quickly.
So true.
There's the physical scattering. I also think that in Los Angeles, because a lot of the people that I know are gig based, they're writers, performers, podcasts. It's not like, of course, we all have this day off to do things. So I will admit, I feel like I have a ton of individual great friends or a little circle of three or four friends or that kind of thing. And I feel like there's some communities that are like, I'm welcome to come to the party, but I'm not central to that community kind of thing. Yeah. And in my thinking about that and my wife and I discussing it, this is where get around to attempting to answer Anthony's question. I think the best ways to find community is to find things like events that are regular, that they are routine. I know lots of other people have that experience in LA where we all talk about it, where, and I'm sure many other places in the world, just talk about my own experience, but the we should do lunch joke.
Yeah.
Cause you'll hang out with somebody and you'll legitimately really like one another and want to spend time together. But because you're trying to find it as a one-off event and you maybe got 10 people, like it starts to become a time issue where like, I have friends where I know I want to get together with them. I know they want to get together with me and we try and then we cancel and there's no like they're canceling because we don't like each other. It's totally like, yeah, I know you got to pitch tomorrow or, you know, you're trying to finish, you know, this podcast, but the water's off. And like, for me, I think it's if you can have whatever interest you have, you know, can you have a board game night? Do you want to go to do you want to have movie parties where you introduce each other to movies? Do you want to take, you know, dance lessons with this specific group of people, you know, a sport, whatever it is? I think the times I've had successful community is when I have found a routine. So it's not a special event. And it's something that people can kind of begin to cluster around of seven of us, maybe 10 people come in and out, all do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a part of your life. It's a part of your routine. And I think that's what builds community.
Yeah. Making those new routines. Yeah. And just being open to it. Right. And it seems like Anthony and his wife will be making a good decision, I'm sure. But yeah, just going, hey, this is where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Up there. That's good. Yeah. It's brave. Yeah. We did risks this week. It's risky.
I also think that there are so many ups and downs with social media.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of us are having that experience where community feels weird and different because community used to be the people that you physically saw. But now we all have I think a lot of people have, here are the handful of people I physically see in the world. And then here are my 200 ghost friends on social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That I legitimately like would probably be there for me if I reached out, but it's just kind of, we have kind of two different mm-hmm. versions of community. We have the in the physical world and in the digital world.
Yeah. And I think it's a bit of a bonus. It's the good side of it. You can still reach out easily to those close to you and feel close enough, even though, they're not right in front of you, but there's something valuable about what Anthony and what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The tangible world.
Yeah. The other thing I would say for Anthony, having been through this experience, is obviously that you want community in support in your new home and area, but also just remembering that, you know, this is a golden time to stay connected to friends from physically distant places. I think one of the good things that came out of the, you know, world altering event of the pandemic for many people is just being a little bit more okay with online gatherings. Even like you and I were die hard. You podcast live, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never would have done this. And now we're always in our sweatpants talking to each other on the computer. along those same lines, I have a group of friends in Minneapolis that I used to play role-playing games with. And I was like, I guess we could do it online, but it isn't going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And now I've been playing mostly weekly, often canceled, but mostly weekly role-playing game with some old friends. And it's great. And it's made me feel that I am still connected to that community, even though I'm not physically there. So I think, a physical move is a change, but it isn't entirely an ending of a community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important to remember too. You can still find your way. Good stuff. Yeah. It's tough, man. Even sometimes, starting a new podcast, that's another community.
Yeah. Any kind of working together is definitely building community. I have one last thing to ask you about on this topic, Ken. I have been trying to get better about, if I think of something that I want to text a friend, just text them. You, in my opinion, are a texting monster. You maintain multiple text conversations with many, many people. Often when you and I are just catching up, you're like, I was texting so-and-so. And do you feel like that is a way to build community, to just have quick, no big deal conversations more often on texting?
I think so. I'm scrolling them because what happens is I'll miss one. Hal Loveland. It's been a few days since I text Hal. I don't know. I don't love phone calls, right? And that's a selfish reason. It takes too much of my attention. There's so many things going on in my life. I have a couple friends who are still don't text me, get on the phone. And I love the idea and to have that connection in an old school kind of way, but it's also important. But man, that's not where I'm at right now. So having that conversation, I can just go back to, or you have your ongoing threads. I think we all have that, and then you have the different, you have to make sure you text the right thread. Is it the Mark Ellis Makuga thread, or is it the Mark Ellis Christian Rivacaba thread? Which one is it? It's just, once it really became easy to text, because remember, we all had the ones where you had to press the keys 17 times to get to the right letter you wanted back in the day with those razor phones and everything. Once it really became easy and I could do it on my computer, that's when it changed. When I tied it into my MacBook and I could just sit there and type you paragraphs, which are annoying. I try not to do that, but I can sometimes go long. It just became easy for me. And that's how I can just, I'm big on the, I try, and I have to remind myself, it doesn't come naturally to like, oh, I haven't heard from that friend in a few days. Let me text him. Let me text her, see how it's going on. You have the benefit of not needing to get texts from me because I talk to you once to twice a week. But other people don't, you know? So yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a great habit to get into. So well done. Any other thoughts for Anthony before we move on?
Anthony, you're going to do well. That's what I'll say. You're going to do
well. Yep. And, you know, Anthony put in this question a little while back, so he might already have like, you know, 8 new podcasts and a bowling league and who knows what else.
Yeah, absolutely.
An archery team. Who knows what Anthony's got going on? Let us know. Maybe we got some ideas for the way people in Los Angeles can build better community. Moving on to a question from Elias. Elias says, I could use some fashion inspiration. So how about fashion center? What are the best clothes for work, play, the beach, etc.? Is it okay to wear a cape? What about driving a car with a creature mask on it to avoid having to put on sunscreen and or make eye contact with others? Well, as you can tell, my idea of what constitutes clothes is a bit wide ranging, so I could use some other center wisdom. This is the part of the program where I apologize to Elias that Jennifer wasn't able to join us for this episode of Q's.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Jennifer has great fashion knowledge and insight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, where you go, Ken?
Well, I'm going to cheat number one because I'm traveling the week of recording. So I already made the thumbnail for this episode to put on YouTube, and it is the picture of you with your cape, which is one of the greatest photos of all time.
Perhaps overused on our thumbnails.
Yeah, perhaps. But it's a wonderful photo. Is it okay to wear a cape? I mean, when am I ever going to have a chance to use it so specifically again? Is it okay to wear a cape? I mean, I think so. I wish more people brought it back because I'd like to wear a good, powerful cape there. But all this stuff sounds, it's all about comfort level and maybe safety level. A creature mask and a driving a car might not go together. Be careful with that. But I will say I'm not a fashion plate, never have been, but, I'm more comfortable with what I'm wearing now because I have a little bit, I've decided what I want to be and what I want to feel like in that clothes. And it feels comfortable, but it also feels not unique. A lot of people can, you know, I'm a bearded comic with a beanie. Like I could find 50 of those at the comedy store on Friday night, but I feel real comfortable in my own skin in a way I hadn't felt before. And I used to dress it a certain way outside of work. I used to joke in the height of dressing like it, I look like an off-duty FBI agent and I don't feel it, like I didn't like it, but I just felt I had no other choice. Mm-hmm. And I had tried in the 90s to, you know, when I was in radio, not that I felt needed to dress rock and roll, but I just wanted to have a little more personality in how I dressed. At one point I did paint my nails black. I dyed my hair black, tried that. And it was fun, but it took a little too much work for me at the time. But I went to a party for a radio station and I tried to dress up a little fancy, a little bit more like quote a rock star. And I felt so embarrassed by it, but the problem was that was more me than how I dressed, you know what I mean? Mm. And I was too afraid to lean into that and be comfortable and with that. And it took me a while to just, you know, again, I'm pretty simple dress right now, but even, you know, I own a bright pink beanie I got in Paris. It's one of my favorite things to wear and it stands out, you know, and that was something I wouldn't do. I was sensible black shoes. I intentionally would get black shoes so that no one could see my feet, baggy blue jeans and a black polo shirt. That's all I wore. And it wasn't right for me. Could be right for you. Could be right for you, Elias. But it was like, and eventually it was like, no, I want to do something else. And that's it. It's about the self-confidence. If you can pull off the creature mask and feel good about it, then do it.
Yep. I think it is all about comfort on multiple levels. And I think one of the comforts is saying, I want to have a fashion statement. I want to look the way I want to look. And, you know, I can't speak to modern times. I guess I don't know what the experience of maybe younger men is in the year 2023. I don't know how old Elias is. But I think I was definitely affected by a little bit of the sort of gross gendered. Women should, you know, work real hard on their appearance and make a statement. And men should, maybe you got one nice suit if you're going, if you got to go to a wedding, maybe you have one nice suit. Anything else is kind of, you know, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? You know?
Right.
So I think that for myself, it took me a while to say, I want to really make choices and make statements. Mm. And not statements really to the to the outside world, but more to myself. I think that like the first level of comfort is giving yourself permission to say like, yeah, I have every right to build my identity, build my appearance. It's, you know, and nobody else needs to, as long as I'm not endangering others, as long as my cape doesn't have knives hanging from it and swishing it around, like, I'm expressing myself. That's not okay. The creature mask should have large eye holes with peripheral vision while driving.
Large safe ones. Yes.
Large safe. Yeah. You got to be able to check the rear view, check your blind spot in the creature mask. Then you're all good. And then I think it really is about comfort of how do you feel? There's looking in the mirror and seeing how you look, but then there's that, how do you feel? And for me, it changes a lot. I think it was around 2008, 2009, I wanted to have a little bit more ownership of the way I look. Mm-hmm. And made some different hair choices. And that's when I really started wearing all black. And I had got the, at the time, red Converse shoes. Mm-hmm. I'd worn them in a couple of shows. But in particular, I got my first pair of red Converse shoes playing a farmer talking about wheat at the Mill City Museum. So it didn't start off as like, I'm a fashion plate. I was just like, I kind of like these red Converse. What if I combined them with the black all the time? That feels like me, a little bit understated, a little gothy. Mm-hmm. And then with this pop of color, that felt like me and it felt right. And that's what I've mostly been doing. I recently said it's okay to have change, and I've been wearing blue Converse instead of red Converse. Mm. And I've been enjoying the change. It's been really fun. I still have the red ones. I can go back to red anytime. Yeah. I can wear a different color every day if I want. But I did post a picture on Instagram, in London, which was one of the first times I was just like, I feel like wearing the blue ones. So I'm going to, cause I get to choose. And somebody reacted to a photo, a friend from Minneapolis, saying like, it looks great. It looks like you're having fun. What's this with blue shoes? Where are your red shoes?
That's fantastic. No, I love hearing this, and you know, tracing the different, I know it is such a statement. And by the way, you know, when I adjusted to a slimmer cut of jeans, not skinny jeans, I just tighter, slimmer cut, black jeans, black t-shirt. And I've said this to you before on and off air, I think, but out of respect for you, I've never purchased red shoes. I have a lot of other multicolored Converse, but I've never purchased, because I come from the pro wrestling world. That's your gimmick. That's not going to be my gimmick, being the ring attire that people wear is the term for it. So, I've avoided that, and I don't have blue, so we're good. I do have blue shoelaces, but I love to talk about the ownership and there's seasons of it there. I talk about the blue jeans and the polo shirt, simple look, but like there was, I did not own a suit in my life until 2005. My dad never owned one. My dad looked down upon it. I don't know why. I think he's more uncomfortable with it than just doesn't like it. Cause I know, cause I inherited that hard wiring a little bit, where if I'm uncomfortable, I attack something to make me feel better about my uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. So he never felt comfortable in a suit for whatever reason. I don't know the whole story, but so he never owned one. And my entire life I was told, you don't, that's just silly to wear a suit. You don't need a suit. And I even went to a church that was a pretty, the pastor, like, I don't want to say he made a rule that no one could wear ties, but you would feel out of place if you weren't in like sandals and shorts, because it was like a church, right? So it wasn't until 2005 I'd attend a wedding, and I had gone to many weddings before then, and I just put on a button-up dress shirt, and then I'll learn to do a tie badly, but no suit. And finally I was like, no, I want to get a nice suit. And it felt as though I was not fighting my mother and father, but it felt like I was like, I'm gonna do this for myself. And then that turned into a job that needed one. And that became part of my identity for a while. And that the whole pit boss thing, the schmoes thing came just because I had to wear a suit to work. And then I'd go straight there to the studio. But it was a fun era. I had like at one point 14 suits, I think.
Mm.
And I own zero now. I own zero. I'm back to where I was. I own a jacket. But it was a good time. And it felt good at the time to be like, no, this is where I'm at. And I'm going to own this look. And because it makes me feel a certain way.
Yeah. And I love suits and I love wearing them when I'm doing the right kind of show or the right kind of event. I think that suits are the kind of thing of like, it is about the cut. Absolutely. But it is also like, I think the fashion thing is just kind of like, what's your vibe? What do you like? What are you, you know? And I think for both you and I, we have a mix of both the sort of, we like a certain amount of precision. Mm-hmm. And we like a certain amount of improv, and there's something about a suit that's like, it's kind of precise, but you loosen the tie just a little bit. And now it's like, oh, wow, who's this wild person with the slightly loose tie and the sharp suit? It's, you know, there's so many ways to sort of express yourself within that one thing of a suit. I think the other thing for me, and I assume that Elias is joking up to a point about wearing a cape or all that. The other thing for me is, I have, like all of us, a split between the extrovert and the introvert. And there's some things that, like, there's a part of me that does just want to wear a cape. Then there's a part of me that's like, I'd like to wear a cape for myself. I don't want to talk to everybody about my cape.
Yes.
So that's another level of comfort of, like, for whatever event I'm going to, even if it's just going to the grocery store, going to see a friend do a show or whatever, what do I feel comfortable in physically and emotionally? Like, I have this Batman t-shirt that for some reason people really like, and I've tried it to make sure it's not just a one-off, but I wore that Batman shirt to a couple movies, and I take a good long walk down Hollywood Boulevard to a movie theater, and I would get like five or six different people from all walks of life going, nice Batman shirt.
Yeah.
And so some days when I'm like, I'm feeling friendly, I'm feeling outgoing, I'm going to put on the Batman shirt and have people talk to me. And the other days were just like, I'm in my head. I'm alone. I want to be alone. I'm not wearing the Batman shirt today because I don't want to talk to people about it.
I don't want to deal with it. Yeah.
And I think about that for fashion too, of like, what is the expression that you want? Do you want, you should dress however you want that makes you feel the most comfortable, but there still is that choice of like, what's going to drive engagement and do I want it or not today?
Yeah. That was going to be my final area of discussion in this question is the nerd stuff and how that's, and I know, You and I probably have similar journeys, but I think you were a little bit more comfortable more earlier on than I was. Again, but I didn't hang out with you in 2003. I don't know. I'm to the point now where I don't express a lot of my love for some of the fandoms that I have via t-shirts or hats because I just don't want the conversations, good or bad sometimes. Maybe I'll get to it again. But the moment at about 2011 or 12, where a lot of those shirt companies were popping up with the, you know, what if Khaleesi had a cereal? Could you imagine Dragonos? Like all those ripped apparel, T-pub kind of shirts were popping up. It felt really good to finally be able to lean into that from some of my upbringing, some of just even the job I'd been in the world and the friends I'd had, where the fact that I owned a Princess Leia shirt for years was something to be mocked. Right. And that a Return of the Jedi shirt I had that I used to wear in the elementary school would get me physically assaulted. Right. Like you and I emerged from that era. And Jen would agree. So to be able to, you know, around the time of starting to get more into digital media stuff, guess what? Look at this shirt. It's what if Indiana Jones was this? Like it felt really good too. Talking about ownership and comfortable in your own skin. That was a big moment. And then it's okay that I'm not in that anymore. Right. It's eras. It's periods of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what you feel like. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I, I, have a specific kind of shirt, pop culture shirt I like. I don't like the ones that are like busy, even when it's like, hey, that's one of my favorite comic book covers of all time. I don't want to wear a whole busy comic book cover. Like I want iconography. I want like a simple image that represents a much larger idea. So I try to go for just like one single logo. So even within like my pop culture shirts, I feel like I have a fashion that feels like me, that feels comfortable. I'm the kind of person who goes around using words like iconography to discuss my t-shirt choice. And that's what that tells people. I also have some shirts that I don't mean this in a hipster way at all. I mean it in a good finding community way of like, the only people who would recognize this to bring it up to me would be an interesting conversation. You know, particularly with that Galaxy Far Away, after, you know, a lot of people having some real strong opinions about a couple movies in a row, you know, wearing a Millennium Falcon shirt meant there's good odds that if anybody brings this up to me, they're going to tell me what they don't like. And am I up for that today?
Yeah.
But like in the James Bond literary world and in the movies, but it's there in the literature too. The cover name for MI6 is Universal Exports. So Bond, you'll give people his card and say, I'm from Universal Exports. And I have a Universal Exports t-shirt. So the only people who are going to bring that up to me are people who are all the way into James Bond. And that's a great conversation because people are like, is that, where did you get that? You know? So those, so again, to me, it's all about inviting the kind of interaction that you want that makes you feel comfortable that day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, that to discuss that all too much. But yeah, I have a pretty basic Imperial, the design of the hallways and the Death Star and their ships and all that stuff. Right. And I have that shirt and I got wrecked one day at someone at a bar. Someone was like, oh, hey. And our friend Darina, who's wonderfully snarky, turns to me and goes, I bet that makes you feel good. It's like, it does.
It does. And there's nothing wrong with it. And this is definitely a discussion that I wish Jennifer was here for, because I know that it gets very, very complex when women want to express themselves. And then a lot of people have lots of reactions and feel free to engage in ways that they shouldn't. I want to acknowledge that, in which Jennifer was here to speak to it with more experience and wisdom.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. So I love this question, Elias. It's very fun. And last year on Halloween, my wife and I took a walk around the neighborhood where all the kids were trick-or-treating, and a bunch of parents also had a little bit of dress up. And I might wear my cape for a Halloween night walk, because that feels like a comfortable time and place for me to wear my cape.
Love that. Love
Otherwise, catch that cape on the live stream and the thumbnails. Any other thoughts, Ken, before we take a quick break?
No. That is it. Wear what you want. Wear what makes you feel good.
Exactly. You being comfortable is the most important fashion thing, I think. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back with one more Q here in our episodes, Qs of the Other. This comes to us from Brian Babcock. Brian says, hello, hello, Joseph, Ken, and Jen. Again, I'm sorry, Jen's not this episode. but Brian says, I'm curious who your all-time favorite actors are. If you feel this might be too long to answer in a Q&A, may I humbly suggest this is an Other Center ranked episode. Smiley face. Thanks for reading, and may the force of others be with you. Thank you very much for the question, Brian. I think that we can probably discuss this and still, perhaps someday do another center ranked episode, because we're not getting to hear Jennifer's, list. Maybe this would even be a fun one to do in other center ranked, when the strike is over, because yeah. I think we're trying our best to not, obviously we're not, you know, doing every episode all about, Star Wars. We're trying to, every once in a while, we mention the existence of a movie from a struck company or whatever. This one's a little harder. So I think we're going to try to talk about the actors without necessarily citing a bunch of roles and scenes in specific movies. So we're not just listing, struck movies for 15 minutes.
Yeah. I'm gonna try.
Yep. So, yeah. So we'll walk that line. Come on the tightrope with us. And maybe we'll do a more expansive episode. So, Ken, just to start with, how many people did you write down? Did you make like a list of five, or do you have like 72 to pick from?
I didn't write down a lot, because it's an interesting, much like clothes, I have to break it down into eras. It's changed a lot for me over the years. And when I remove one from the list, so to speak, I don't really truly remove it. I'm just focused on someone else. And that's also how... what happens? New actors emerge on the scene, or some performance grabs you in a way that the actor hadn't before. And then, so you kind of get a period of time where you're like, oh, I love this person's work and I'm going to talk about this. And then that fades away. So, and I don't mean that as a cheat to be too vague. I'm happy. I'm going to dive into some specific names, but
yeah,
in trying to make this list, I was like, who really is it beyond just, you know, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher. Like, you know, who is it? But that goes to that, where for a while, those were my three favorite actors, because I was 7 and 9 and 10, and those are the movies I watched over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, I did see Kramer versus Kramer very early, and I didn't know what I was watching other than a weird, tense drama where a kid got hurt. Like, I just, you know, I didn't know who Dustin Hoffman was. So, yeah, that's where I go.
The breaking it down by era is great, because what I did, I did not spend the time on this that I would if we were doing a ranked episode. You know, I would made a list and then I would have winnowed it down. But I really started to run into the era thing. I also realized that, as you were saying, a lot of my favorite actors are, I love them in a specific role because they're tied to a specific story that I love. Mm-hmm. Like, I could easily list Kyle MacLachlan, but a huge amount of that is Cooper. So I was trying to kind of challenge myself of like, who are actors who are, maybe they are attached to a thing that I really love, but who are those actors that across eras, like when I see, oh, that movie looks kind of interesting, and I'm kind of curious about that TV show. Wait, that person's in it? Oh, and there is overlap. There are people who from, you know, some of the big things that I love, but there are people on my list that are just like, I'm going to really think of like, who am I just always excited to see their name pop up in the credits?
Mm-hmm. The separating it from the character is a great thing. And you could go to a bigger example in pop culture, like you are with Kyle MacLachlan, or you and I could talk about some of our lightsaber wielding heroes. But like for me, a great example of that is the actor comedian J.B. Smoove, who I love him, but it's his character from Curb Enthusiasm that I love.
Yeah. And I legitimately think that Mark Hamill is one of the best actors to ever do it. Like, but there is also that, you know, that connection that you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. So, how many, this was like the shotgun approach. I have like 10 people written down. How many do you have written down?
I have less than that, though. I cheated because I really have like 80 under one banner.
That's an interesting puzzle.
Yeah. You'll know it the moment if you stop and think about me and over the years, you'll be like, oh, I know where this is going. Cause you've even poked at this in a fun way on some of our databank shows before.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Start me out with a couple.
I'm going to go to one that's still an absolute favorite. It came during an era when I was in high school. So this is the early to mid 90s. And maybe the reasons back then had more to do with outside appearance. But I absolutely think this is one of the best actors out there of that era. And if she had more opportunities or wanted to do it, she'd still be that. And that's Madeline Stowe. I was a big fan, and that for a while was an annoying part of my personality, probably to my friends. When some of the movies in from the 90 to 94, 95 range were out, she kind of at one point, her and husband Brian Benben got a farm, a ranch in Texas, and she kind of went out there, had a kid and kind of went out of the limelight. And then she came back. There's been a few times she's come back, and one of the TV show Revenge. I remember that. But she's just, I don't know, again, trying to avoid specific performances, but it went from, and I'll just say it, you know, I thought she was hot. I was a high school kid, and I was like, oh, I like that actor. And the challenge for us men, I think, is to push past that. And great, cool. You have a physical attraction. Cool. That's chemistry. Got it. But what's there? And and every time I dug a little deeper into what she was doing on the screen, she just absolutely became one of my favorites and is just a heavyweight for me during that era. And it's still one particular movie is one of my top 10 favorite movies that she anchored, and just love everything she does in it. So that's where I start. Madeline Stowe.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I have always been a fan of sort of classic Hollywood, and been spending some fun time revisiting films that I haven't seen in a long time, paying a little bit more attention to certain actors and hunting out a little bit more of their less famous roles if they're in a couple of, you know, really well-regarded films. And I've got a couple of people on my list from sort of back in the past who are, you know, long-term favorites, and some who are like I've gravitated to more now. And the first person I wrote down on my list is Barbara Stanwyck. One of the sort of classic leading ladies of Hollywood. She is in some very famous noir films. She's in some very famous comedy films. There's a Preston Sturges film that I watched recently, which was just sort of like, I feel like I've never seen this film, but somehow it's in my DNA. And she's always fabulous. But in particular, what is so amazing about her performances is she starts in the 30s. So I think she's got some kind of early films that are pre-code. And that can be a little racier, a little more honest, a little darker. And then she starts, you know, into the 40s when you're getting into the, everything's got to be locked down. You can't show this. The movies have to end like this. And there is something wry and sly and honest and devious and a little dangerous about her, that she's just got this amazing chemistry where she can sort of hint at the truth, the subtext with a look. And it's really powerful. It makes her powerful in comedy and in noir and in, you know, romantic comedies, all sorts of things. So I've been really fascinated with finding her, some of her lesser known movies.
That's great. That's a classic.
Yeah. And then on the complete other opposite end of the spectrum, a long-term favorite is Peter Lorre. One of the original character actors, I think maybe our culture still recognizes Peter Lorre impressions. I hope so, because if not, we're losing something as a culture.
Yeah, there's a big animated show we've covered that he pops up. Yep, right.
Yep. And if you don't know Peter Lorre, give yourself the treat. Look up some of his actual performances. Look up cartoon versions of him over the years. Incredibly distinctive character actor. And he did have range. He played some variety, but it just almost this perfect sort of like sniveling, trying to get one up on the hero, but never really getting what he deserves. It's just a phenomenal character actor.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So those are some of my my older time people. Who else you got?
I have to. One of the people that always calls me is trying to call me now, and you're going to hear the phone. I have to turn this phone. Call back to the earlier conversation. I guess I'll just keep sliding through the eras. But so in the mid 90s, I was studying screenwriting, film production. I thought I'd be a director, you know, maybe a little comedy, maybe a little acting, all those kind of things. And that drew me to two names that have popped up a lot during this era. And there's a funny story about the second name, but Ben Stiller and Ed Burns. So Stiller, you know, for a lot of reasons, and him emerging from the sketch comedy world and kind of a leading man. There's a lot of movies in the mid 90s that I loved. There's a superhero one in 99 that is just one of my cult favorites. But Ed Burns, I would not describe him as, you know, one of the world's greatest actors, but I just love what he was doing. And there was something, he was for a while, like one of the indie filmmakers in a time where I was trying to figure out how to do this. So I really liked what he was doing, maybe more as a writer, director, personality in the space versus what he was doing on screen, which I'm not here to disparage him. He was in Spielberg's World War II picture, all that kind of stuff. But I then, when I was in LA and my second level, the Groundlings, our teacher asked this, so funny, Brian, our teacher asked this exact question to all of us. What are some of your favorite actors? And I want to know, because that might inform how you write or improv as a sketch. So I proudly just go, this is about 2000, year 2000. I go, oh, I love Ben Stiller. And I go, I love Ed Burns. And people in the class go, no, literally audibly. And one girl sitting next to me shakes her head. And this isn't, you know, to my knowledge, wasn't because of anything he had done or, you know, wasn't necessarily that case. It just was like, people were like, that's the incorrect answer. I was like, what? But I like his stuff. I like, and my teacher, Tim Bagley, was very nice and very like, it let him have his choice. I got shamed into never watching his stuff again. I literally let myself be bullied. I was like, well,
bullied out of Ed Burns.
Bully out of Ed Burns and his gravelly East Coast, Ed Burns. I'll never forget that feeling. Maybe that's why I try to be better now as someone who defends what other people like in space sagas and whatnot, as I just an entire improv sketch class turning to me and going, your answer is wrong.
I think interesting people often have those answers. They're like, what? You know, that's the other thing with this list is like, yeah, sure, Harrison Ford. Yes, of course.
Yes, of course.
But right? There's also a part of me is like, well, but these conversations are fun when you make discoveries, you know?
Yeah.
Like Ed Burns.
Again, it's not my answer. Just at the time, Brothers McMullen, all these kind of things, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I kind of want to do that. I'm studying what he does and how he did it.
He's a great person for you to bring up as far as I'm concerned, because we're trying not to mention too many specific films and television shows, and I can't name a single one Ed Burns is in, so no risk.
There you go. I still like Stiller and all that kind of stuff, but there was just a time where it just was, especially in terms of sketch and everything, and me as a performer was, he's kind of an underdog, everyman leading guy at the time. So he was described by, I think, Gene Triplehorn as ex-girlfriend at one point of, you know, the thinking man's leading man. And I just liked that. I was like, that's how I'll win. I'm not going to win by being the leading man. I'll be the thinking man leading man.
He was doing the same kind of comedy that, for a lot of reasons that I think a lot of men of similar age were doing, mm-hmm. of smart, nice, but really upset about life and always yelling.
Yes.
And I think a lot of us are like, I want to do that.
Yeah, which led to his superhero character in that movie.
Yep.
Total Rage. Yep.
Yep, this is a good one. A couple more for me. I'll whip through some of them. I have a deep love of character actors, of actors who are fully capable of, you know, playing leading characters and have in some films or television shows. But there is something just a little off about them, a little bit unique. In two of those, Harry Dean Stanton. Love him to death. And Jeffrey Combs, who is in several Lovecraft-inspired films and then is on a space show where he plays multiple characters. Just I had the privilege of meeting him at the Lovecraft Film Festival last year, and there were some jokes that involved him, and he was a sweetheart about them. But just as an actor, if you've never seen anything he's in, he gives intensity a whole new world. He's incredibly great and intense.
That's great. Couple quick ones for me. Emerging from the Stiller Burns era was also my love of Chris Cooper. You're right. We're going to have to revisit this week, Doug, but there's just a moment I'll just think in Great Expectations. I won't talk more. There's just a moment in that film that he has that's one of the most heartbreaking moments I've ever seen on film, but it's played so beautifully. And I remember that moment thinking, this is back in the era where, like, you're not online, you don't have the IMDb app. And I was like, who is that? Like, and he'd been in things before, obviously, but I was just like, this guy just broke my heart in the most wonderful artistic way. And I loved him. And I saw the movies and, you know, still going strong and had some big swings as well. But just, and I guess he's a character actor, but not, I don't know. You know what I mean when I'm like, he's not the lead hero. He's usually doing something else.
Yep.
Love him. I also John Goodman, and I go on, we're going waves, but right now with the television show he's on, it just reminded me of just how wonderful, how much of a presence he is, what he can do, his, you know, coming of age with a popular sitcom, late 80s, early 90s range was, how I, like so many, got to discover him, but he's much more than that. And some of his work with the Coen brothers and everything is just, I just absolutely love him. And I think there's a wonderful skill level, but also just to a warmth to his presence. And the final one before my final one is, I have to say Steve Martin, but that's not even, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. Oh no, sir. There's another one too. George Clooney too. I went through a Clooney phase. I got to say I went through a Clooney phase because he is a leading man. He is a class. He is good looking. And after he emerged from his big TV show stuff, there was the superhero phase, the action star phase. And that, I didn't like that phase. It didn't seem right. Right. He seemed like a chin and a big paycheck to me. And then I think he went to some other places that he's in some of my favorite movies and has some of my favorite moments. But Steve Martin's more than just an actor to me. He's a creative influence and an icon to me in so many different ways. And so, but it'd be remiss if I didn't include him.
Yeah, no, I wanted to include him, but I thought you were going to, for me, he's such a Renaissance creator. I love him as a comedian. I love him as a playwright. And love him as an actor. All sorts of things.
A painter, a poet, an essayist. Yeah. I get you.
Yeah. Having said that, I searched my soul. Do I mean this? And I do. Speaking of Renaissance people, my friend I talk about fairly often on the podcast, Frank Sinatra. He's a really unique actor. He wanted to be a one take Charlie. He preferred he would rehearse. He knew his lines and he wanted it to be as authentic as possible. And he wanted to do as few takes as possible and get the good take first. He is known, for some of his life story. He's known for his music. But it was a huge part of his career and his success. His music comeback would not have been as successful had he not had a film comeback that was a huge, huge turning point for him. And he is in some of my favorite movies. And what I appreciate about him as a performer is, even though he is capable of great precision, he wants things to be raw and human and real. And that's part of good, bad, or otherwise why he wants to be one take Charlie, is to get that restless energy and capture it and get it in one go. So it's as raw and real as possible. And as a result, some of his film roles from fun musicals where he's, kind of a naughty scoundrel really some of the most serious and upsetting dramas you can find. And he's got the humanity and the gravitas. He's one of my favorite actors as well as one of my favorite singers.
That's a very smart pick. I think that wouldn't be considered by a lot of people,
Yeah, no, they're a loss. So how many more do you got?
I got about 80. But it's in one thing. It's pretty much the entire cast of Game of Thrones, which is
I was thinking, like, is there a baseball team that did a movie together then?
I kind of actually mean that. Like, it's like for a long time, and that's why you'd our Data Bank Brawl episodes around here. You did an entire
that's right,
cast members from that show in our Space Saga show, and I just continue to be blown away by top to bottom, from the top line stars to the featured players showing up for a day. They just always seem to find just some really wonderful, compelling actors. And there's always going to be little moments here and there that don't work. Sure, I get it. But just like, I just was continually blown away by just the performances all through that series. It's one of the reasons I love it. And it for me set a personal high standard for a lot of other performances and a lot of other things, if I'm being honest. And there's a reason I wanted to pull every single one of them into the Space Saga world, because I just want to do it. And in the end, many have in big roles and small, but it's a joke, I know, but it's like, it really was. I just like that person and that person and that person. And it's because of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that, no, I think that the show was cast incredibly well, and all of those actors have such great range and gravitas, and I could pick almost any of them. Mm-hmm. I have two other categories that I'll make quick as we wrap up here. So a couple of the people from our Space Saga that I did want to mention, because they have such expansive careers beyond it. They are people that I gravitate toward, that I sort of want to watch as much of their filmography as possible. And that is Ewan McGregor and Christopher Lee. There's just something about Ewan McGregor. He is a phenomenal actor. Mm-hmm. He has great dramatic chops. He has great comedic chops. There is the connection to him from the Space Saga, but he is definitely just one of those, I'd watch him read a phone book type actors. That everything he touches, everything that he's in is better for having him in it. Christopher Lee, I've been obsessed with. I've always really liked him. And I read his autobiography last year around this time. Mm-hmm. And I've just been obsessed with him, with his fascinating life and the way he struggled with confidence too. And you're like, you're, you're like, you're an amazingly tall, dapper man who's made over 100 films, deeply loved and respected. And his book still starts out like, I guess some people didn't think I'd have anything interesting to say about myself. Nobody's ever liked me because I'm so tall. I'm always wondering if people think I'm a good actor. I think I'm a good actor. I've tried hard. And like, it's so amazing. But man, learning more about him, I'm not going to say resurgence, the even higher profile he had from some of his roles in genre stuff, in the 2000s, you know, thankfully let a lot more people know about him, but his great work in all the Hammer horror films, endless accomplishments. He's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Here's the last one I'll do, Ken, I was really trying to just like shut my eyes and go, who comes to mind? And then some people came to mind. And then I had to ask myself, why? Out of all the different people that you could list, why did this? It's a list of three people that popped into my head. Timothy Oliphant. Ian McShane. And the sadly recently departed Lance Reddick.
Yeah. Oh, God, he's so good. Oh, God, and corporate ducks.
I know, right?
It's just so hard. It's just, yes.
I know. I could list like four different shows where Lance Reddick did his Lance Reddick thing that is some of my favorite shows. Like, okay, why are these three? And I realized I think they're kind of actors that come up on people's lists. And I think it's because of their presence. Mm-hmm. They're acting. Talents are there and they've got range and they can do different things, but they often get cast in the I'm not putting up with your bullshit roles. For me, it isn't sort of John Wayne sort of I'm in charge always and I get to tell you what to do. They're almost always play characters who are like, there is much to oppose me. But I am planting my flag and saying, nope. And there's something, they're charming, they're good actors, but there's something so cathartic about that role. When you've had a long, hard day and you've put up with all sorts of bullshit, and then you turn on a show and you see Ian McShane's eyes blare out at you and just have that attitude of, not today. It's so comforting.
And his Deadwood catchphrase, I shall not repeat here.
Yes, even after the strike, we shall not shout that out. My friend and I, as a benefit, did a that show Deadwood continued to a four season, and I got to play Ian McShane, and it was one of the most liberating things I've ever done.
Can't imagine. It's great. That's great. Yeah, I love it. We could go on and on and on. There's so many names, and you're probably out there listening, going, "But what about?" Yeah, you're right. All right answers.
Yep. This was an exercise of like, I'm literally going to give myself only 5 minutes and just see what flies out. Yeah. And in the future, a more organized list with Jennifer's, I have no doubt, surprise contributions. Can come in the future.
That's wonderful.
Any other thoughts on favorite actors, why you gravitate toward them, anything like that?
Nah, just Ed Bird's fans unite. Let's meet. There's going to be three of us. We'll go to a coffee shop.
Well, we had an answer about how to build or a question about how to build community, and now we have the answer. It's your own private Ed Byrne society. There we go. Your people are there. Find them. Well, that is it, Ken. You want to let people know where they can find us and send us your Ed Burns fan fiction?
That's right. You were on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social. We're on Threads. We'll get to other spots too. Facebook pages, Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, and a whole lot of other spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Follow me at Cadnapsock. Go to my website, cadnapsock.com. From there, you can get information on upcoming comedy shows and my recently released comedy album, In My Day, recorded live in London in front of many Force Center friends. It is available. Check out, if you want, the special edition on Bandcamp at kennapsock.bandcamp.com. Over 30 minutes of bonus material. Joseph, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. If you want to stay caught up with where the short film I've been working on, The Nightmare Adorable, where that is playing at different festivals, I'm keeping a running list on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. Just scroll down until you see the little picture of the monster, and then there's the information. And I celebrate Ken releasing his album on Bandcamp, and I'm going to continue to piggyback on that by reminding you about my comedy albums on Bandcamp. I do think Bandcamp is a great artist-friendly, artist-forward forum. And in particular, Bandcamp is tied in, for me, with my production company. I really need more funds to submit the film to more film festivals. So if you want to check out a comedy album on Bandcamp of mine, that will directly help me submit my film to more festivals. So that is it for me.
That is it for Joseph. That is it for me. That's it for us. We'll see you all soon. And celebrate your favorite actors here on Other Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.